Welcome to the 10th edition of the St. Petersburg, Florida Area News Podcast for the year 2019. I'm your host, Joshua Black, and this episode will cover the City Council meeting held on March 7th. I was not able to attend the meeting in person, but I was able to watch afterwards. The meeting began with the deletion of Agenda Item E4. Councilmember Jordan Rice requested that the item be pushed to next week, because no one was available to give the update they had requested regarding the recent troubles at Bayfront, the healthcare provider for the city's employees with the city's self-insurance plan. The consent agenda only spent about $450,000 this week. That's shockingly low considering that it was across three projects. The next item was the settlement for damage to a piece of private property. City attorneys were able to secure a settlement with the owner for $60,000 after a sanitation vehicle damaged a detached garage beyond repair. Council approved the settlement unanimously. The sidewalk table prohibition ordinance was given its first public reading. The motion to set the public hearing for March 14th was approved unanimously. Next was an ordinance regarding a fence on private property. The code's compliance staff felt that this permission to vacate the property and allow rebuilding of a better fence with landscaping was the best way forward. Council approved a new public hearing date for March 14th. Council also approved the naming ordinance for the Sanitation Administration Building. That public hearing will be April 4th. Next matter was a church with property downtown trying to transform its parking lot into an office building with parking. However, the city wants to pay to make public parking available in that building. That's 300 spaces at $28,700 per space. So the cost to the city would be around $8.6 million, which the developer would receive in taxes. This helps the church sell the property. The city would receive 15% of the operating profit in exchange for the one-time purchase, but the taxpayers wouldn't get a rebate on the money spent. Council approved the term sheet unanimously. Item E2, the request for $750,000 for the 23 stops in the bus rapid transit, got the expected fireworks. Montaneri pointed out that the city had already committed $4 million. Staff said that this funding is in addition to that. Montaneri asked about FTA funds. Staff said that those funds are for sidewalks. Montaneri asked why the funding request was so urgent. Staff said that PSTA is moving forward with the designs for the stations and that waiting will force retrofitting rather than design inclusion. Montaneri also asked if other cities will be funding art on their side. PSTA said they were planning to include art only in St. Petersburg, not in the adjacent cities that will be included on the route. Montaneri then asked if any additional funds would be requested from the city for the bus rapid transit project. Staff assured this was the last request. We'll see if that's the truth. Gertis asked about thematic plans for the art. Legal advised that the administration would be the decider on approving the art, but with Gertis looking for an opportunity for input, City Administrator Tom Green stated that he would be okay with bringing the top three project proposals to the council for their opinions. Thus, council approved the appropriations unanimously. Next was the sewer report. Claude Tankersley presented two spending items for approval, one for $954,392 and one for $178,207.55. Both were approved unanimously. Tankersley also reported that there was an unapproved discharge of about 50 gallons of sewage. He stated that the cause was grease that rose to the top after being put into the sewage system by private persons. City Water Resources staff went to the houses nearby after discovery of the spillage to put notices on doors to remind residents not to pour grease down the drain. Next item was the item pulled from the consent agenda because it included a waiver of the apprenticeship wage requirement for a city contract over $1 million. The union objected to approval because they said that they could provide the apprentices necessary for compliance. Tom Green said that the $4 million represents an effort to resurface 110 miles every year. Staff said that any delay would push all of the resurfacing project back, but that they would pick it up when or if they need to get a new contract. Foster moved to delay it anyway, and the whole council agreed. They will receive feedback from the proposed contractor to find out if he will commit to complying with the apprenticeship wage requirement, and then that report will be given on the 14th. Then council moved on to new business. Council member Gina Driscoll moved to refer an item to BF&T to discuss providing incentives to drive folks to increase the efficiencies of new HVAC units in the city. Gerdes wants to open up the code to allow for a new kind of metal material for fence construction, and Cornell wants to have a committee of the whole look at providing WikiWachi funding for a maximum project. All three items were passed on to their respective committees unanimously. And committee reports began. Montanari report on the BF&T meeting we covered last week. There was a resolution to amend the purpose statement for the city's investment policy. That motion passed unanimously. Gerdes gave the report for the committee of the whole that we covered last week regarding the storefront conservation corridor overlay. Constituents voiced objection to the ways that the city government is trying to implement an idea that they already agree with. I also requested that the council push the date back to April 18th instead of April 4th. Councilmember Brandy Gabbard agreed and made a motion to that effect while separating the zoning portion from the grant program. Staff objected to the delay and to the continued bifurcation of the grant program versus the zoning program. Staff tried to pretend that they are surprised that there are still objections, even though the attorney for the property owners has been making these objections for weeks. Gabbard insisted that contacting business owners is different from contacting the property owners, and that the property owners were not included until too late in the game. Rice pointed out that these particular owners aren't generally connected with the St. Petersburg Chamber of Commerce, and thus staff would need to work more diligently to get word out to those folks. Council approved the delay until April 18th and set the report date for the grant program March 14th, based on a motion from Foster, who cited as her reason the fact that the funding for the grant program had already been approved back in October. After dinner, the city council addressed the rental inspection program. An ordinance passed in the 1990s allowed the code's compliance team to give landlords a citation if they refused to allow an inspection for rental units. The legal team advised that the city of Daytona Beach had been sued for a similar ordinance on the books, and staff advised that they have already adopted a warrant-based inspection program. Council passed the new ordinance language unanimously. The next hearing was the Driftwood Local Historic Designation Quasi-Judiciary hearing. I'm really sorry that I could not be there for this. There are 47 parcels affected by this designation, but the owners are not united in seeking this designation. One has even filed a lawsuit prior to the intended hearings back in December to prevent the proposal from moving forward at all. The reason is that such a designation limits the kind of actions that property owners can take in that given area, and thus limits the kind of people who might be interested when an owner decides to sell. One such owner's attorney was present during another public hearing and stated that his client is living in a nursing home and trying to cover his bills with the sale of his house of more than 30 years. A potential buyer has plans that wouldn't be allowed under this designation and thus would withdraw if it passes. He hasn't found a buyer that would give him more. The applicant's presentation was mostly nostalgic, as should be expected in such a proposal. Sadly, in a clear show of bias, city staff was used to produce the video presented to council on behalf of the applicants for this hearing. I expect this to work against the city in any future litigation. The registered opponents pointed to possible ethics violations with regard to information withheld from voters prior to the first vote, which was noted in an email sent by the applicant to the city staff. They also pointed out that the ballots received were counted in discordance with the historic designation ordinance, saying that the ballots not returned should have been counted as being in opposition, and that some ballots received in favor didn't have a postmark or date stamp by which to verify that they had been received in a timely manner. They further stated that including the landscape as part of the designation was simply not allowed by code and was rather evidence of lack of maintenance. They also concluded that only 9 of the 43 parcels were legitimately historic and that the rest of the structures were non-contributing. After extensive, and by extensive, I mean more than 3 hours of testimony, the legal team addressed the matter of the timely receipts of ballots and verification thereof. Michael Demas stated that metadata in support of statements by staff regarding the process of verifying the time of the receipt of the ballots would be used to support the city's position in court. Council therefore approved the designation 6-2, with Montanari and Gabbert voting no. You can absolutely expect a second lawsuit to follow quickly. After the vote, Council received the co-sponsored events committee report. Council approved the exemptions and waivers for the upcoming events related to alcohol sales and to nonprofit requirements discussed in our previous reports. Councilman Ed Montanari gave the Public Services and Infrastructure Report for February 28th, noting that Gerdes' motion to make the requirements of the responsible wage proposal mandatory and to require compliance with state, local, and federal laws passed unanimously. Council member Galbert, eager to depart at close to 10:30 p.m., simply moved to receive and file the detailed Housing, Land Use, and Transportation Committee report, which had already been submitted for the perusal of the rest of the council. I couldn't help but note that the day had started at 8:30 and didn't end until 14 hours later. Breaks in the action notwithstanding, that's a long day for anyone, and it is entirely the fault of council. By trying to control the shape and scope of development in the city, they have burdened themselves unnecessarily with the cares and concerns of busybodies whose sole purpose is to hinder changes their neighbors desire to make or to force their neighbors to make changes they'd rather not. And practically none of it has to do with actual criminal conduct, which is the only thing that God created government to address. Unfortunately, I expect more of the same for future weeks unless there is a change in the mindset of the people of St. Petersburg. Now, I had not expected to be able to make this report, but I was able to find some time over the weekend to review the record. I cannot promise that I will be able to do so again next week, but I will make every effort. Thanks for listening. This has been St. Petersburg, Florida Area News, a production of the Reconstructionist Radio Network.